Oh, there's no pause, isn't there?
Hello.
But you have to see that, but I didn't dare. And Tigger standing on the beach and they're howling his head off of laughter, you know, and Dad couldn't stand to laugh. That's why I had to pretend it was all my fault.
I thought that was the time when Dad...
No, that's the time.
With the load of hay.
Oh, no, that was another story about the comedy. I don't think I put any of that in here.
What happened that time?
Huh?
What happened that time?
Well, he got a great big, he cut a bunch of wild hay, you know, and dried it and that. I went down with the scows and loaded on, and I went with him. Well, I was sitting on the hay pile, for the cattle it was. And he was pulling it like an Italian, what do you call those? Yeah, he was pulling it up the slew, you know, and the tide was running just right, the thing was just sailing along. You know. Anyway, this darn pipe pole stuck in the mud. And here the cow kept going. It took him a little while to slide down the pole and get the pole out of the mud and chase the cow.
You were on the scow still?
I was on the scow with the hay, but he was pulling it and the tide was taking it right up there. Beautiful.
That mud was pretty bad here. I guess...
Still is,
I oh, sticky as anything. It's very sticky.
Tell Virgie went in and got her gumboots stuck in the mud.
I got mud stuck in the mud this last time. But that's sheer comedy, you know, but none of that's been put in here. George is new to it, he's funny stuff.
What was that, Betty? Betty went up there. Was
what?
It Betty, or was it Virgie that got stuck in the mud?
Oh, Betty would have got the people in there. Maybe she would have left there. And
she fell off the dock.
Yeah, she was. So Joan, she toddled across the bridge, and she was old enough, oh, that's maybe around 5 or 6. But anyway, she didn't like her hands or face getting dirty and she fell off the bridge in the mud. She came in all the mud, she was mud and she was just bawling her head off.
Dad had always all the chips on the bridge. We always went around with bare feet. And they'd been cutting wood and hauling it. And it was all, you know how all was very hard and it hurts your feet. So I was being very careful and walking. And Norman and Tommy and Virginia and Tim and all of Johnny, they all ran across. They were running across the grandma's place. But I ran, I was too, my feet were too tender.
But Jack,
yeah, but I came back,
that was another one funny on Jack, you know, he's one of those types, he always got up in the morning and couldn't shave and all the rest of it. He washed his face and went down the water, down to the dock, and he had his hands in his pocket. He went to jump into the boat and he didn't get his hands out of his pocket and he flopped out of his boat. He came up, he was mud. But he was feel so happy, everything was going right for that morning. But he really did look funny. But that's too long for me, though.
Oh, God, well, that's okay. I like hearing all the good stuff.
You've got that.
The toys scattered on the floor, wearing a pretty peach satin dress that her Aunt Mary had sent her. I can see the swan rock that Mrs. Tycone had sent out to Joan. Her boys had outgrown. They moved to Lucas. And you could really enjoy them. Mrs. Tycone had sent out. Her boys had outgrown. Canute. I don't remember how his last name was spelled. It sounded like it's up his name, Canute. But he was a count, anyway, or something like it. He had a flash camera and took the pictures. He also took her first picture when she was about 3 or 4 weeks old. Virgie then called Manny by Joan. Was asleep upstairs, being 4 months old. I noticed lace curtains at the windows which gave the room a very civilized look. We found this picture of Orkney. It must have been a comfort to his dad's mother, the curtains and the linoleum made it look quite livable. She didn't think. And Homie heard John was doing all right by himself, so 1931 came along. Your dad wasn't much at writing home, and I knew he felt he was felt he had nothing to brag about, so I started writing, filling her in, doing a bit of boasting, I guess. Anyway, she was so pleased she wrote regular that Dad never wrote home. He had came to Canada and planning on making a fortune in one generation, like they all had, they had done in the old country in many generations, not having the ability or the desire to exploit other men's labor. This could not be done. One of the great attributes of his that I greatly admired was he gave more than he ever took. So for 1931, the year of the, what's that? The year of the cow, oh yeah, and the census, Joan had been reared on powdered milk, Clem, but Virgie had been had her mother's breast long past time to wean her. And a cow was decided on so so they could have fresh milk. Dad made arrangements to buy a cow from Dunmore, $60. The great day arrived and we walked to Dunmore to bring the wonder beef home. She had a young calf so that would be fresh milk and plenty. Dad led her and the calf and I trotted after. Big red pole Angus, bread for both milk and beef, bread for both milk and beef, just what we needed. The cow's name was Roxy, and we named the calf Molly. When we arrived home with our herd, Grandfather's knowledge of beef noted her tail had been broken after bait, but that didn't seem to be a major fault. The major fault, what was her ability to eat cheetah bugs?
Oh, not really, no.
Well, that cow, she did, they didn't have good milk for it. A good feed for it. She got cheetah bugs and tasted the butter.
Everything tasted
gave her milk and butter around to cheetah smell. She had been brought up where grazing was scarce and developed a real taste for cedar pine. In a cedar pole area, cedar was plentiful and Roxy always had her fill. The Molly grew inside and no one robbed her of it.
Is that why you went and got hay?
No, we got another calf, and Rocky got overeaten it after a while.
Oh, I don't remember that. She was still eating up when we moved to court, and Grandma used to complain.
We gave that to Papa.
Yeah, she was eating.
Grandma made cheese out of it.
Must be a unique flavor of cheese.
It's a new style.
It wouldn't be cheddar, it wouldn't be,
so
Molly
grew in size as no other, and no one robbed her of the lion's share of milk. The two little girls didn't think much about it and drank it eagerly. And so Molly grew up into a mammoth beast, but dropped her first calf and died hairless thing. Yeah, she was no good for having calves. And remained thin and gaunt after a bet was sent in from outside as the cattle around Port Clement area were suspicion to have TB a lot were destroyed or burned, after all tests were made. Molly staying thin worried your dad and very much that there was how TB infection was supposedly spread into families. And families in Westbury. So the bet was sent for and we did Francis cattle and all of them. Gave our cows the test, but by that time Roxy had Foxy, a little heifer, and our car passed the test and all came out clean. But Molly gained weight. She was huge. And we sent her to whooping. I think we got $4 out of it. And it was butchered and sent out. Nothing. I can't remember exactly.
Molly, I thought that's the one you gave to Kenley and he butchered it.
What? No, Molly, I mean. We butchered Molly because she dropped this calf and she wouldn't. She might have another same deal. But she was fed up.
It was 1931
was also the year of the census. The conservatives were in power federally. The president of the conservative group in Fort Clemente, being a Scotchman, one day Dad was in town and passing his establishment was hailed in. Your father being a Scotchman, a returned vet and leading a so-called conservative life, was asked to put in his application for the census taker at the north end of the Graham Island. And of course he would be sponsored by the said other Scotchman. Neither of us realized at that time anything about political patronage, just felt it was a stroke of good luck. It was a fact. I know now they thought it was conservative. Neither of us knew about these things. I just felt it was a stroke of good luck. $6 a day plus $25 for the boat. What a bonanza for both us and Ralph. We had these boats with Ralph and Ethel. Dad had to go to Rupert to sit for an examination as to his ability for briefing. He returned home and was ready for the Jody Ralph boat began on. For the starting gun, Ralph always was able to kick some sense into the old motor after a baling wire operation. The boat had an old Model T engine in her for a heart, and after so much beating and swearing at, she at last gave up the ghost. Halfway through, that little Jody. I can't forget how I made it out. We had to do it at a certain time. The boat had an old Model T engine in her for a heart, and after so much beating and swearing at, she at last gave up the ghost halfway through the job. I guess she blew a gasket or something. Finished by a smaller boat. Dad was sworn to total secrecy and, being an honorable man, never divulged any secret information he gathered during his century or something. So, friend or foe, he never divulged anything. Okay?
Yep.
You get a kick. When it came to the native population of Old Massa, the Indian agent gave him the lump number of the village inhabitants. None of the natives were interviewed separately or as a white square. Just the number of men, women, and children were given him. He did think this was strange. I don't remember him asking me any questions. I guess we were enumerated. I hope so. He may not. Any questions? I guess we are enumerated. I hope so. Maybe thinking he was a census taker, he and his family were exempted. When he came home from Prince Rupert, he brought us a gift for me, a yardage of silk dressed good, mauve color, and a little Brownie camera. That's where I took all those little Brownie pictures. Brownie camera for Joe and a bean doll, as she called it. You know, just picture someplace there. It Well, for a toy, I put beans in a baking powder tin. You rattle it, you know, that was your rattle. And the doll had beans in its head or something. And you rattle it and you call it your bean doll. There's a picture of it someplace in there, of the bean doll. Joan had a rattle on his head for a makeshift toy. I put beans in the baking powder tin. Got the name of the bean doll. And the bean doll was born. Anything that rattled with beans there. First you got a nice real rattle. I have the first snap with that camera. Dad holding Virgie on his knee and Joan beside him and examining the toys. And like I had someplace there. The toys. Virgie's first birthday and she began to walk. Joan, 2 years older, was tall for her age with a serious mien. Dewar looked, as her father called us. And he used to shake his head over your doer look. And he called it. And very large eyes. The bird is very outgoing and cheerful. 1931 passed through for Christmas came and went. The cow had to be left night and morning, and if your dad didn't return from the barn as soon as possible from the night before, I would be sure the beast would travel in and had visions of terrible things because the cows I was scared of, even if she was a moody cow with no horns, you know. That was terrorized those animals. I'd never had to go around a cow. And I was always sure, you see a cow lean over when you're milking, Dad would lean over towards him, you know, and I was sure they were going to squash it against the skull, you know. He'd find him dead in there. No horn, that's what a muley cow is, but just the same, sometimes she might get her dander up and do him in somehow. One night I remember he hung the bucket of milk on the nail outside the barn and wandered over to Grandpa's house, parents' place, for a chit chat. I ran out to the barn, no light, as he had taken the lantern with him. To satisfy myself, he wasn't laying in agony on the barn floor. I don't think he really realized how fearful I was for his safety. If he went to town in the boat and didn't arrive home on the next tide, I would be terribly... I would be in terror, the boat would swamp or something. What's that? He was the type that went and came at will, not fearing anything. One day when Joan was on the way, I sat sewing at our front window, looking across the slough. Your dad had a message for Tingley's camp over the way, and he had walked across the slough, waded across the slough, walking along the beach towards the camp. This I'm going back, I think.
This is the bear, I think.
With his hands in his pockets, was when a bear walked out from the woods behind him and was following him. I raced madly out and down the walk, yelling at him. He stopped and looked around and saw the bear and waved to me and carried on walk with his message. The bear wandered off into the bush when I was weak with sweat. I was sure he'd get ate up right there in front of me. Well, what would you think if you saw a bear was following somebody?
Do you remember the time the bear... They went out in the woods to shoot the bear and...
I was away at the hospital.
Oh.
You know, this Ole Olsen used to carry this here dried out old sausage in his pocket.
Oh, it was jerky.
And these two girls.
It was jerky.
Anyway, they walked out the window and Della was taking care of them, my sister. And they were hoping the bear would get their dad so that Ole would be their new dad and he'd have this sausage.
We were wondering if the bear was who would be our daddy. Then we'd get old because he had carried his
But this great big Swede,
Because he had this next shirt.
The Delaware killed herself laughing about these girls liking him. Yeah. Well, they liked him because he'd always get his jackknife off and hack off a piece of this meat and give it to the kids, you know. They thought it was great stuff.
I think we're quite worried for Dad's safety too.
Another time when Tim was away, was on the way, we had taken Virgie, left Joan with grandparents and our little dog, Rummy, in a rowboat up to visit Evans, and coming home, the tide being low, Dad was waiting and pulling the boat with Virgie in it, and I and the dog walking on the beach. A bear came out from Cumber's Island side, crossing the slough in front of us. The dog lit out after the bear, and Dad grabbed an oar, and right after to save the dog, but it was his dog, you know. With an oar, right after the dog, the bear, then after the dog and bear, I frantically screaming for him to come back and trying to get Virgie out of the boat. The bear ran into the bush and Dad and Rummy came back full of disgust at my ears. But you can imagine the tide out, and here we were on the beach, you know, and trying to get, and the baby and Virgie was only a little time in the boat. Terrorizing. Mm-hmm. And your dad grabs an oar and chases it. Yeah. What a nut. Mm-hmm. Dog lit out after the bear, and Dad grabbed the oar right after the bear. I frantically screaming for him to come back and trying to get Virgie out of the boat. The bear ran into the bush, and Dad and Rummy came back. But Rummy was only a little dog. The bear could have taken him, and Dad would have fought for the dog. let's see. Mm-hmm. Dad, full of disgust at my fears, he seemed to have no fears of the woods or the wild or the tame animals. He didn't seem to have any have a way with animals exactly either. We had a team of horses he had bought from Ralph Ward, Princeton Major, which he thought would do for plowing and clearing. Prince proved to be really unmanageable. Grandpa said he was known as a wriggling, that's a half off of a darn horse. And Grandpa said something to do with castration. He had a Roman nose and a mustache and a mean rolling eye.
A horse with a Roman nose.
Oh, yeah.
And Dad couldn't do a thing with him.
Oh, he was an awful. I remember that horse.
Major. But anyway, that mustache and mean rolling eyes. And all he would do is rear up on his hind legs when Dad harnessed him, and he got no work out of either of them. Tingley, on the other hand, could handle them fine. He was a real mule skinner, and had a vocabulary noted to mule skinners.
He was what?
A mule skinner.
But what do you say about two mule skinners?
I said, Tingley.
Oh, yeah.
He could get him to work, you know.
I swear at him.
Where was it now? Tingley, on the other hand, could handle them fine, the both of them. He was a real mule skinner. That's what he used to use. Beat the tar out of them and had the vocabulary noted to mule skinners.
Oh.
So he used them and plowed our garden for us, the same with machinery. He ran Ralph Diesel, which left him. Then his clothes were sodden mess of black diesel oil. One day walking over to grandparents' place, I passed your dad. He was too busy to notice me, monkey wrenching the machine. The air around him was blue with oaths, such a language I'd never heard from him. I covered my ears and ran crying home for home. My mother and dad finally got out of me. What was the trouble was I'd never heard my father swear or Jack. They were men apart from ordinary men. I just couldn't believe it, you know, Dad would swear, but he didn't see me coming.
Who was swearing?
Huh?
Who was swearing?
He was working, your dad.
Oh.
He was working on this donkey engine, and he was not very mechanically minded. He always had trouble, but that's the only thing he... You'd see him with a monkey wrench, he'd break that thing ate all the pieces. He never was much for machinery. I was assured most people get exasperated to the point of swearing. It took a while to get over my Jack getting so violently mad at an inanimate thing as a machine. I wasn't a violent type. It took a lot of real prodding to get me mad, and still does. But I found out he had a fiery temper that could explode unexpectedly, but not with me. I knew when to laugh at him and when not to. One such time in the morning, he left house for, oh, that's when he had his hands in his pocket. One morning he left the house for work with his hands in his pocket, very neat and clean, and going down the front walk into our little wharf, jumping down off the wharf onto a log that was slippery and falling off, and not being able to get his hand out of his pocket, went flat on his face. Not true, but it was terrible stuff. That was sticky. It flew mud. Couldn't stand coming back in the house, I had the wildest desire to laugh, but knew better, not then. He couldn't stand to be made look ridiculous. We had many hearty laughs after. Another time we were taking our scow down the slough, that's the time. And our scow down the slough to get a load of hay. He was pulling the scow with a long pole, the tide being just right. The scow was skimming along, and he was standing up on the back edge of it, like a Venetian, what do you call him, gondolier?
Gondolier,
yeah. And giving the scow an extra push for the pole. He dug the pole into the slew mud too deep, and the scow kept going, leaving him clinging to the pole. Of course, the water was only up to his waist in the summertime. But having me as an audience in that ridiculous position didn't help his temper. So I choked back my laughter on the later friends and said, you know, funny at that. Another time, we were both left in a ridiculous position. We had paddled a tricky dugout of canoe across the slough to visit the Tinglers. Leaving for home, I got in the canoe and sat down. Your dad came a push out to the canoe and jumped in, flipping over, leaving both of us sitting up to our necks in water. Tingley roaring his head off on the beach and father blaming me for the mishap. I knew I wasn't to blame, but let him save face without arguing and taking any further scene. And I know he just used to push it out, you know, and hop in a rowboat, you know, so I don't piss. But this dugout canoe, I don't wonder what happened to it. Looking back on our lives, neither of us had too many frustrations at that time, and looking forward to a bright future. Washing machines were unknown at that period. I did lose a bit of skin from my knuckles trying to scrub diesel oil out of your dad's Stanfield and the endless diapers on the old washboard, but that was all part of the bargain. We were both busy and both sturdy. One thing I refused to learn to use was an axe, so Dad filled the wood box and the kitchen to overflowing with wood. He never brought just one little bit, you know, enough to last for the day. He had to bring enough for a week, you know. And there was wood all over the kitchen. But Dad liked to have a week's supply so he wouldn't have to do it daily. So on to 1932, the Depression was really hitting the city. Word was drifting up to us from somewhere how really bad the things were in the outside world. Being in a constant depressed area, we really didn't notice the difference. You know, it's a fact.
What was that you were talking about, grandpa?
What?
His rat, his grandma.
I just remember to tell me she'd seen the whale.
No, no.
Huh.
Grandpa was saying something about grandma when they first got married. She didn't have any.
Right to her back and now she's all right. That's sort of his joke. Well, we were in a depressed area and we never realized it, but we ate well. The dog always says, well, look how we ate. But if those men hadn't worked their heads off in the garden, we wouldn't have ate. And we began to get literature from somewhere. And Dad began reading in the evening aloud to me while I curled up on the wood box, listening to him, his tone of voice invariably lulled me off to sleep. It was a fact, he had a tone of voice with that thing song of darkness. I couldn't keep awake to listen to it. No matter how, his tone of voice invariably lulled me off to sleep, so what he read must have seeped into my unconscious mind, but enough seeds were dropped. And we began to be aware that something was the matter, no matter how hard one worked, the necessary things were hard to come by. And what of our children, and what kind of future for them? I had done a lot of reading in my life, and a hodgepodge mixture of non-factual history and fiction. The sort of things one finds around in a school and the church library, which now I had outgrown. Your dad had been very disillusioned during the war and after. The church and government meant nothing to him. Sickening rumors of the rearming of Germany, of course, and this was being done to help Germany to fight off the Russians, whoever they were. Rearming of Germany really sent your dad off. He began to worry over it. Also, the great number of unemployed. We had lots of work, but no money returned. But we were managing. Every nickel we made went into a store bill for plain necessities. 1932 came. Father finished his preemption duties and later was to receive the stumpage money. I went with Ethel when she went to Charlotte. I think she went to college at my checkup. She was born in February. To see the doctor in April for her 6-week checkup after her son Tommy was born. And I had to have my first prenatal examination. My baby wasn't due for June, and when we arrived in Charlotte and after the doctor examination, he announced my baby would probably arrive that night. No matter what argument I put up, he was insisting I stay. I couldn't go home. Louise Ward, an old school friend, had just had her son Dickie and was nearly ready for discharge. Me being such a shorty, the doctor was completely fooled. Day after day went by and no baby. Altogether, I spent 54 days there. The doctor and wife were a middle-aged pair, had been missionaries in China, and 3 times a day gave prayers for the poor heathen. Well, isn't that a story? That is the truth, a recollection. The doctor and his wife had a middle-aged pair and had been missionaries in China, and 3 times a day gave prayers for the poor heathen Chinese. They had been stationed somewhere near the Great Wall of China, as I remember seeing their little daughter picture on it. She had died there during some upheaval when her father had been away, rushed to another spot to tend sick and wounded. She would have been my age, and they had 3 other sons in Vancouver attending school. I would have been 22 that June the 23rd. I found them very wonderful people. I ate my meals with them. And when at last my baby arrived, June the 9th, I had the easiest childbirth up to that time. His wife, the nurse, gave the anesthetics and knew the right amount. And one dose is sufficient to during the bad times. Brother Timothy John Stuart Hewison arrived with a mouth a complete square.
Complete square.
Howling his head off. But for all the names on, I didn't think I'd get another son, you know. I'd had two girls. I thought they were going to be all girls. Never another son.
Worked out even, Stephen. Three of each. Worked out even, Stephen. Three of each.
Mm-hmm. I found that last one. He knows that. I wrote letters. Every time I called him a him. You got anything to drink over there?
There's coffee. You want some?
Oh, good. I put up. What's that? Yeah, they kept me over there anyway. I got a long time. They didn't charge me all the time. It's your own fault. I found them very wonderful people. I ate meals for them, and when at last my baby arrived, June the 9th, I drew these shoppers from Timothy John Stuart Hughes and arrived with a mouth completely square and a large howl coming from it. I bleed a ball for at least 2 days after. He bawled because I was sure he had a headache from being born.
I just imagine a little baby having a headache.
Yeah, but I say he called for 2 days and I was sure he had a headache. I'm being born. Francis Evans reported the great event to your father, thinking he would be overjoyed at the prospect of a son, but Dad had acquired the taste for little girls and the idea of a different sex center in our family was as exciting as I was. He was the marvel of my life. I was sure he wouldn't. I'm sure I wouldn't be lucky enough to have another man child, so I tacked all the inherited name on him right home. And immediately called Tim Buck after another rising star in our, you know who Tim Buck was, communist leader was in jail. Everybody called Tim Buck. Even Grandma called him Tim Buck.
She didn't know who Tim Buck
was. I don't think she did, but everybody else did. That was what Tim was called anyway. Immediately called him Tim Buck after another rising star in our lives. Late in July, we received the Stumpets money, a whole, I said, 3,000. It must have been around less than that, and it must have been. I don't think 3,000 sounds an awful amount for up there.
Well, it was $500 an acre, you said.
Yeah.
So that would be 6 acres.
No, for clearing it. Oh. It had been $1,500.
$3,000.
I said, well, give or take.
Thousand.
Now your father could fulfill another dream. He had long harbored geese that flew being natural for wild geese after nesting in the north, returning to the Charlotte where the mild winters and the natural feeding grounds was perfect for them. We would go to Vancouver and combine a holiday with business. Also investigate the rumors of conditions on the outside. We took Tim, who was too young to be left behind, and left the two girls with their Aunt Della and Grandma. We took the boat. A big experience for me, as I hadn't been off the island since at my arrival in 1923 spring. That experience for me, being inland bred, the mighty ocean was a frightening event. I remember I never went on deck. This was when we went over there. I was afraid of getting washed overboard. John, the nipple, until we landed, remembering the stories of the Titanic, I was sure I'd be washed overboard. Your father being out twice since he had moved to the Charlotte, besides having a big Atlantic crossing in 1920, was a world traveler in my eyes. So this trip with him, I felt no fears. We arrived in Vancouver, Don McKinnon, Ralph's old partner, an old partner who had hung up his court boots and vowed he would find an easier way of making a living. Just before Dad and I were married, Don McKinnon's advice, he stayed at the Abbotsford Hotel until we could find something more suitable. Being people of wealth, we phoned the desk and made arrangements for a babysitter. Him being fed and bedded down, it meant someone in the room to keep an eye on him, as he was still too young to turn over or wiggle around. Dad and I took in our first theater together, the old Orpheum, real live acting.
But not a quite a life.
Oh yeah.
A woman of my age or older, I found out to my horror, she had just been released from the TV sanitarium. I guess that's I got the tip. I had visions of Tim getting TB and all my fault for wanting to taste of gay life. Well, it would be all my fault if a kid would die of TB. We just seem to get it, didn't we? All my fault for wanting to taste of gay life. The next day, Don, Dad, and I and Baby went looking for a bed sitting room. We found one on Hornby Street in one of the old road-type houses that had been homes at one time, but by then had been converted into bed sitting rooms. It had a bed, table, chair, and a coin-operated gas cooking stove, which also I needed for heat, and the bath and to bathe him and wash his diapers. One opened the windows to hang out the wire clothes. Well, that's Vancouver. A real improvement on the slough where one had the lug to wash out the side to up steps to the clothesline. I met one of the tenants, widow with a 14-year-old son, who was on relief food vouchers, and for 25 cents an hour agreed to take care of Tim. The walls were very thin, and one heard arguing from the other unemployed tenant. Husbands tramping the streets looking for work, wives cramped into these rooms. One in particular was expecting a baby. She had to borrow the woman's upstairs coat to visit the public health clinic. Nothing ready for the baby's arrival. Before I left, I gave her most of Tim's diapers. I remember going down to visit her one day, and she had to cook and eat their meal sitting on their bed. Just imagine that sort of life in Vancouver. The food vouchers were made up of very plainest of food, dried beans, cheese. The beans took hours to cook, and at 25 cents a throw, they were up a week's supply of, they ate up a week's supply of gas to cook. If I remember, they allowed themselves 25 cents a week for gas. The soap issued was sunlight. The neighbors let me try some, and it really took the hide off one's hand. I never bought it again. There were issued vouchers for food from some central food bank, and not having a car or a bus there, they had to tote it home on foot, which wasn't too bad for the younger people, but must have been pure hell for the older folks. At the stigma of it, older folks, and at the stigma of it, when we visited the stores, the shelves were piled high and very few customers there. So you see where I got my education? Going and seeing now, I don't have a fit. I remember passing a toy store and being close to Joan and Virgie's birthday, 14 and the 21st of August. We went in and bought two dolls as big as they were and had them shipped up to them. They cost $1.95 each. Can you imagine that? They were beautifully dressed. And my first experience of going into a pub, being a hot day, Dad wanted a beer, so I tagged along after him. Not drinking beer myself, I sat very uncomfortable at the table and watched Dad have one. The beer parlor was empty, but for us, the beer slinger, I guess the beer slinger must have wondered what I was doing there, not knowing that where I came from, ladies didn't enter beer parlors.